This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
I want to go back to one thing that was said this morning by Mr. Liu. He said, and I quote, "You didn't charge the president because of the OLC opinion." That is not the correct way to say it. As we say in the report, and as I said at the opening, we did not reach a determination as to whether the president committed a crime.
That's Bob Mueller. There was a lot of testimony. In fact, 8 hours of testimony on the Hill. The Democrats trying to go for the jugular, not really finding much there. The Republicans, and I said the jugular of the president, the Republicans trying to go after Mueller. It was the same kind of thing that we've seen over and over again, only this time it was dragged out between two committees. The first hearing, the House Judiciary Committee. The second, the House Intelligence Committee. What does it all mean? We're going to talk about it here right from the get-go. Kate Delaney, welcome to the show. And I'll tell you what, I can sum it up in one word. I was thinking if somebody came down from Mars and said, what was that all about? I would say it was a boondoggle, a wasteful, unnecessary activity, a boondoggle. And we paid for that boondoggle, by the way. So that's one less cheeseburger I can eat when I have my free day to eat what I want to eat. Seriously. So what were the highlights or lowlights, depending? I'm going to give you all of it right now. Boom, we're going to snowball it out there for you. So for the Republicans were pretty much going back and forth, crossing swords with the Democratic leaders, saying that they were continuing the investigation for the love of democracy and country. And Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, said, when you're so focused on stopping the president, it's actually tough to do what's best for the country and tough to do what's for our election system. In the end, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was asked about impeachment, and she had very little to say about it. She affirmed in public what the Mueller report put forth. She praised the committee chairman, said Congress would continue to exercise its oversight authority of the Trump administration. And she said, investigating, so we have grist for the mill to litigate in court. She's basically saying, we're not going to be impeaching. There's no impeaching. That's not happening. So the president said we had a very good day after the hearings wrapped up. The other side of this is, as I said, it's a boondoggle altogether, pretty much. Mueller pushed back on some of the questions, and he just wasn't sharp. If you did a play-by-play of this, you would say, Bob is off of his game today. His answers were long-winded, or they were just short and terse, but there was a faltering, really, of what happened here. And if I looked at what the main gist of this whole thing was about, for the Democrats, it was about having Bob Mueller say that, yes, the president obstructed justice. And for the Republicans, it was about clearing that all away. But there wasn't any of that. The Democrats, I think, didn't get what they thought. They wanted the spotlight. They wanted to some proof of what they say is the president's crimes. Republicans think that the special counsel just tried to ding the president unfairly. And there's just more confusion and debate about whether the president engaged in any kind of a crime or not. I mean, that's what it basically fell into. The Mueller report was 448 pages. Justice Department legal opinions say that a sitting president can't be indicted, and broad principles of fairness, that's what they say, and that's what Bob Mueller said, had to stop short of drawing a conclusion about the president's actions. And he said, we decided we would not make a decision as to whether the president committed a crime. And you certainly heard a little bit of Bob Mueller there, and that was the opening statement. He said, that was our decision then, and it's our decision today. So it's just was another exhaustive day of jumping jacks. The Mueller report does have acts of potential obstruction, but it stops short of anything else, and there's certainly no conclusion on obstruction whatsoever. So legal scholars across both sides of the aisle were trying to navigate the testimony, and there wasn't, again, anything that came out of this that just, you know, blew you away, that made you say, yeah, that look, they got the president. I mean, come on, this is what that's about. And there, it wasn't there. The Republicans tried to pounce, and the Democrats tried to pounce on the press. So you looked at Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York, and he walked Mueller through Trump's efforts to get then White House counsel Don McGahn to push for the firing of the special counsel, and that was in the report. And he said, those are the elements of obstruction of justice. This is the United States of America. No one is above the law. No one. The president must be held accountable one way or the other. And you know what Mueller said? He said, I don't subscribe necessarily to your, well, the way you analyze that. I'm not saying it's out of the ballpark, but I'm not supportive of that analytical charge. Then you had Richard Blumenthal, the senator from Connecticut, the Democratic senator, and I know there's people listening to us in the great state of Connecticut, and he said Mueller found extensive evidence that the president broke the law and misread Justice Department opinion as tying his hands. And he said he should be charged now. He should be charged when he leaves office. My view has always been that the Office of Legal Counsel opinion is incorrect and inapplicable. The report shows clear criminal culpability that would justify an indictment now, and he should certainly be charged when he's not in the White House. In his report, Mueller had a three-part analysis of 10 episodes where there was issues of concerns of possible obstruction of justice. More than 1,000 former federal prosecutors signed a letter saying that if Trump were not president, he would have been indicted on the basis of the evidence Mueller collected. And then you had Congressman Eric Swalwell, who was running for president and dumped out, Democrat from California, said, are they wrong? And Mueller responded, they have a different case. They have a different case. So clearly, this is kind of, I mean, I could go on and on. This is the notes that I took as I was sitting there, bored out of my mind, thinking, boondoggle. It was more of the same thing that we keep getting over and over and over and over again. The obstructed justice deal didn't play out the way the Democrats thought, and the Republicans pounced on it, and then that was that. The former special counsel did point to foreign interference, and there was some criticism of the president, but there was no real bombshell. And it certainly wasn't about impeaching the president. That was not it. And so I kind of get the feeling, yeah, maybe this is why he didn't want to testify. Because it wasn't good. I mean, there was nothing also in it. He seemed out of sorts, disjointed, if you will. All right, so we're bouncing from the circus in D.C. to Fair or Foul when my pal Nate, the technical maestro, joins me in our next segment. Stay with us.
Under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women. Here's Dr. Sonia Baccia on The Doctors.
So this is a product we're going to see if it works. It's called Instantly Ageless. And the idea is that it works very quickly. Is you just need a very small amount. And then you apply it to areas where you might be a little bit puffy. I have just looked at what's in this product. And one of them is something called argireline, which is sort of a darling in dermatology. technology right now. It's a peptide or a protein that actually relaxes the muscle. It's also called Botox in a bottle. The other active ingredient in this is silicates, which are almost act like a clay. They're minerals, and they're making the skin sort of tighter. It's actually increasing the surface tension on the skin to push that herniated fat pad back.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Shot at in Mexico, 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas, riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet, scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, what the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success, and why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen, well, hopefully not, while pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now, anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com.
Conversation we're about to have. A little special segment we've put in the closet and we're rolling it back out. Fair or foul? Nathan Reeder joins me now, the technical musical maestro of this show. Hey, Nathan, how are you?
I'm good, Kate. How about yourself?
I'm really good. So, I am a fan of donuts except for when I'm on a program and I can't eat them unless they're plain. And I used to work at a big station, WFAN, in New York, and the guys would call me up when I was coming over the bridge, and they'd say, yo, Kate, will you pick us up some Dunkin' Donuts and get this kind and that kind? And they would list, like, all these ridiculous amounts of donuts they wanted because it wasn't, like, a dozen chocolate. There were all these different orders. So now Dunkin' Donuts adds sausage to the menu, and it's not just the regular sausage. And it's on their menu that they call the hangover menu. And it's a vegetarian thing, so it's the, you know, vegetarian sausage. Yeah.
Nice.
So, you know, there's part of me that says, especially when I'm on a program, sweet, probably low calorie, boom, I could hit the Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know, though. Why do brands, I mean, why don't they just stick to the donut making? Because they're so good at donuts and coffee. Are they forced to have to expand their menu because of what other people are doing? I mean, is that fair or foul?
Well, it's a foul thing, but I remember this segment in that it's hard to call things anything but both often.
True. Right?
True. I mean, so you're not escaping that situation nowadays, and you can see it across brands. Everybody wants, if they have a storefront, then they're going to try to make you only really want to go out once today and spend it all in their abode. But yeah, I don't know how foul that is, except for
well, so you're basically saying it's fair in the sense that they have no choice because everybody else is doing it. So if they don't expand and try to grab other people, they'll lose them.
I mean, I think that brings it up to like Burger King and Subway started doing that too. Oh. You know, as far
Burger
as
King.
morning yeah. full breakfast.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Burger King is doing tacos now. They're doing fried tacos that people are getting.
Fried tacos, nice.
Let's go to Burger King and get a fried taco. So I guess it's the sign of the times. So fair. I'm going to say fair, too, because everybody else is doing it. So you pay people big money. They try to figure out what does the American people, what do they want? And if you're super healthy, maybe you'll come to Dunkin' Donuts with your friend who is inhaling a few donuts, and you're going to eat the other option. So I guess that's it. Yeah. All right, you're going to like this one. I'm throwing this one in here because I heard about this today. The American Automobile Association did this thing. They've got these driver training programs. That's not new. But they come up with these surveys and whatnot, and they try to teach drivers better ways to do things. And they're saying that drivers are merging wrong because they're being too polite and it's causing traffic jams. And they're suggesting that you use the zipper approach to merging. And the zipper method is where drivers merge late. So it's like the idea of a zipper's teeth. A zipper smoothly comes together. A zipper merge can keep traffic flowing in both lanes, they say. And then if you do that smoothly, that you won't have those problems because you leave the lane unoccupied, and when you do the early merging, it's inefficient.
Yeah, guys, just do what you're supposed to do, and everything will just work out, okay? Come on.
Yeah, right.
Why aren't
right.
Why isn't everyone already doing what they're supposed to do?
I don't know. No, I mean, here's the thing. People are brutal drivers. Why, Nathan? So I'm calling foul on that whole zipper thing because it's like children. There's no adulting. Maybe the Z generation will be better drivers. I don't know, but it's the distraction thing. I've seen people putting on makeup, reading newspapers. Newspapers aren't dead. They're reading them in the cars.
Yeah,
I've seen people on cell phones, texting.
They're just bad.
Ridiculous.
They're just
bad.
And then they're just bad drivers other than that. You know, people are just bad drivers other than the distraction thing. But, yeah, that's... And we've talked about this multiple times over the years. I believe the activity happening surrounding legislation with cell phone usage, criminalization while you're driving is on par because, frankly, you're probably honking your horn or approaching that point to get someone moving from a light. Most days that you're making your commutes anymore.
Yeah. Every day.
It's regular.
It is. It's normal. It is crazy. It absolutely is. All right, here's another curveball I found out about today. A Texas school district is going to randomly drug test students who happen to play in extracurricular activities or request a permit to park a car or any kind of vehicle on school property. They sent out a letter to the parents. And so if you're in grade 7 through 12 at the Bushland Independent School District, you're going to be tested for alcohol, illegal drugs, any of that, just random drug testing 10 times during the school year. And they're saying they just want to make sure the environment is safe and free from illegal substances. And this is the policy.
They do that 10 times? Is that what you're
yes.
saying?
Yes.
Okay,
so
but
if you drive to school,
10 children will have will
no,
be...
No, random. So, like, I could be driving to school with my girlfriends, which I did when I had my crazy car, and, like, used car, and parked in the Cherry Hill East parking lot, they could say, okay, Kate Delaney, we are going to drug test you now. Like, because, they can just randomly test you.
Because you registered to park there?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I get it. Well,
yes.
I mean, we had to sign that same stuff when we were when I was in high school, and you know they don't check everybody, they can't get to everybody, and you know there's people
so
like
fair or foul. So fair or foul. So drug testing for just because you park your car and
register. I think drug testing is ridiculous in the first place.
Yep, me too.
But,
I say foul.
You know,
I say foul. It's random, come on. And they're playing, I'm playing in softball after school, and you're going to randomly test me, and I'm a good kid, or I'm a whatever kid I am. I don't know. I mean, marijuana's starting to be legal in some states. So what are, I don't like the idea of that. I get it when you're a professional athlete, and that's what you sign up for, or you know the rules when you're an athlete, or you work for someone that's a private company, and they tell you, hey, this is the rules.
I mean, it kind of started like, you know, you're actually getting, you're being put in a place where you can't perform on the team because of your criminal actions, but when you're superseding that to punish them, it better really send a message enough that it's that you don't have any recidivism from any of them, or scare off the next generation from doing
yes.
that. But really, is that absolutely happening?
No. I don't know. It's just, I think it's crazy. I mean, I think it's foul. I think they're just trying to regulate that. Like, ooh, wouldn't it be great if we could just go back to those days where every kid was just, boy, they're a good kid. They toilet papered a house, but they weren't doing any of that mess. Those kids are good. Mm-hmm. Beav's a good guy. I'm glad I didn't go through that. I mean, of course there was rules or things you had to have in high school, but we didn't have that. In my high school, it would have been interesting to see how that would have gone over. I don't think it would have gone over. I think the parents would have protested that. So I do. I think they would have protested because they would have said that's like too much interference into the kids that are going to school there. But, I mean, if they send out the letter and they're telling you, well, sorry, this is what we've decided. Wow. Fair or foul, that was fun. Thanks, Nathan.
Yeah, you got it.
Coming up next, Dave Schwartz, endoscopy, safe or not. Ooh, something you want to hear. And Joe Margolina joins us, retired New York fireman. His story is sad but important. Hang with us.
I read it on the internet. I read it on the internet.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that, too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-919-5435. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-919-5435. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-919-5435. 1-800-919-5435.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Following former Special Counsel Robert Mueller's testimony in Congress, President Trump characterized the Russia probe as a phony cloud.
And you know who knew it was a phony cloud more than anyone else was Schiff and Nadler and Schumer and Pelosi, every one of them.
House Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff sees things otherwise as Democrats make their case.
Before we embark on a course as significant to the country as the impeachment of a president, I want to make sure that we can make that case to the jury of the American people.
In testifying, Mueller offered this response to the president's praise of WikiLeaks during the 2016 presidential race.
Problematic is an understatement in terms of what it displays, in terms of giving some, hope or some boost to what is and should be illegal activity.
This is USA Radio News.
Dish TV is better than cable TV. Why? Because you can save 45% on packages compared to your high-priced cable bill. Wow. Take those giant scissors out and cut the cable and save with Dish TV. Plus, you get a free DVR upgrade to record your favorite shows and free installation. And with Dish Anywhere, you can watch TV for free on your mobile device. Act fast. You can save hundreds of dollars. Does your cable company do that for you? I don't think so. Get all the best TV programming at your fingertips at a fraction of the price of cable TV. So say adios, arrivederci, goodbye to the high cable bill, and save up to 45% on Dish TV packages today. These are limited time offers and can change at any time. Call fast. 800-610-5739. 800-610-5739. 800-610-5739. That's 800-610-5739.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Here on America Tonight, an important one. Think of endoscopy. I've got Dave Schwartz with us, Citizens for Safe Endoscopy. You think about it, and I know Joan Rivers, if you remember, it's been 2 years, but how shocked and horrified people were when they realized what it was that had happened to her with endoscopy. And, of course, her poor daughter was just beside herself. But I think it really shined a light on what are the problems and how do you ensure that it's safe with the procedure that you're getting that you think is relatively routine, or is it? Dave, thanks so much for popping up on the show. I guess that's the question. Is it relatively routine, or do we just think that?
Well, and thank you for having me on such an important issue. There are multiple facets to this issue, but the bottom line is medical dishonesty and intellectual dishonesty on the part of the medical profession. We have about 10 million upper endoscopic procedures every single year. And these 10 million, for the most part, patients are sedated during those procedures. And this is where the medical dishonesty comes in from. It's about $3,000 or anywhere up to $3,000 to do an in-office upper endoscopic procedure, which means $30 billion. $30 billion in the pockets of the medical industry, and patients are paying that money. There is a procedure, transnasal endoscopy, or transnasal esophagoscopy, which basically is like a spaghetti-like camera that goes through the nose. The patient is completely upright, completely awake during the procedure, and the entire procedure does not take more than 10 minutes. and you get the same screening as you would by sedating a patient and going through the throat for the usual EGD. And the reason why this is happening is all about money. The transnasal procedure, the reimbursement is about $200. The in-office sedation is around $3,000. We think we could save $15 billion a year. And also, obviously, there's a safety issue involved, because although the vast majority of sedated procedures go as planned, 0.5% don't, and they end up in some sort of complication. And obviously, in the Joan Rivers case, it was a tragic complication. So when you look at 0.5, it doesn't sound like that's a big number, but right. 0.5 amounts to 50,000 procedures every single year with complications due to sedation. And some of those people are tragically die. And, you know, the medical dishonesty that's going on, where patients aren't informed of a safer procedure where greed is at play here, is just unconscionable.
Yeah, so you're trying to raise that awareness, am I right? And you're doing interviews like this. And what else do you do to let people know, hey, be careful, this is the deal?
You know, we just started this movement. This movement has been really shut down by a lot of forces, whether it's medical societies, the FDA, and also big manufacturers, foreign manufacturers, Olympus, and other endoscopic manufacturers, which own 100% of the endoscope market, and they don't want these issues to come into play. So that's a huge issue. And now with Obamacare, we just heard today that UnitedHealthcare is going to lose $1 billion this year. You know, we could save $15 billion a year in the system, $15 billion, by doing simpler procedures that are safer and are cost-effective. And we're not getting it done, and we're not getting the word out there because of all these forces that spend millions and millions of dollars lobbying to keep the status quo. It's really an unconscionable situation. And then there's the situation of endoscopic cross-contamination. That's the second piece that we're working on.
Yeah.
And we believe, you know, there are 15 million endoscopic procedures every year in the U.S., that 2.7% of them amount to some sort of cross-contamination. That's at least 270,000 patients at risk every single year due to endoscopic cross-contamination. And again, there are technologies out there that could alleviate this problem. There's the endosheath technology. There are disposable endoscopes out there. So we need to push for a complete sterilization standard. You know, this needs to be a semi-critical device, which would call for complete sterilization, as opposed to the disinfection standard that's in place right now, which is the killing of almost all microbial life, but not all. And the types of microbial life that could live through the disinfection process are hepatitis and tuberculosis and all these superbugs.
Wow.
And we have technology out there right now that could avoid this. But again, the forces, the endoscope manufacturers, the medical dishonesty that's going on is a shame. You know, we just want to have an education process and enter into a conversation here where we can do better. We could really do better as a country and alleviate this for patients. And it's the lobbying and it's the big forces out there that are trying to quash this movement.
Yeah, we're speaking with Dave Schwartz, Citizens for Safe Endoscopy, Kate Delaney, America Tonight. And, you know, it's interesting you say about the contamination. And this was on the heels, a lot of this started to break on the heels a couple of years ago of Joan Rivers dying and the contamination in Los Angeles in a well-known hospital. And I think that people are just scared to death. And this is good to warn people there are other procedures. And I want to suggest it by your doctor. You may have some people that take a step back now.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that we got to go to 0 to 100, and you know, we could have had a conversation all along and an analysis all along over a number of years. And by the way, the cross-contamination outbreaks that we hear about, like UCLA, it just scratches the surface, because we don't even know about all the patients out there that have been infected, because the ASGE comes up with it, and that's the American Society of Gastroenterologists. They come up with a fictional number. They say it's 1 out of 1.8 million. At least they were going with that number for a while. I think they're starting to back off it. In order to come up with that number, You know, you have to have an endoscopic procedure in a doctor's office. All right. And then, you know, a few weeks later, you come down with some sort of virus or something. You know, you have to go back to that doctor. The doctor has to say to the patient, oh, yeah, you got infected by the endoscopic procedure that I gave to you 3 weeks ago. And by the way, hang on here 1 second. I'm going to go report this to a medical journal. I think we all understand how fictional and how right. ridiculous that scenario is. And that's where they came up with their number, one out of 1.8 million. It's really a lot more. And there are so many infections that people get, you know, just common infections. A lot of times it's not a major infection when I give the 270,000 number. But and they can't, there's just no linkage to the endoscopic procedure that they had. We have to take a good look at this. And there are solutions out there. We have solutions out there. The endosheath technology, which is a giant condom-like object that goes over all the parts of the endoscope that come into contact with the human body, and then the other parts are disposable. That technology is out there today. And I have to tell you, Olympus, you know, they're claiming they didn't know that their duendoscopes were unsafe. They've known about it since the mid-90s. In fact, if you look at some of their patent applications, they admit that there could be problems with cross-contamination. So I have no idea, you know, what's going to happen with them, but somebody needs to take a good look. I know they're under investigation, and, you know, we just need to know the facts.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people have to go through this procedure because you have people that, what's really prevalent, and I know that's always suggested, is people with acid reflux. And I think more and more people have that. So it's not, oh, that's just something that happens with a few people. No. It's still being suggested and recommended all over the place, isn't it?
Sure. Acid reflux is a secret killer because, you know, that could lead to esophageal cancer, which is the fastest growing cancer, and Barrett's esophagus, all kinds of problems. I have the good news, though, with that. With acid reflux, the good news is when you're doing screening for acid reflux and esophageal cancer and all the other related conditions, you don't need to have an endoscopic procedure where you're put out, you lose an entire day of work, and you're risking, there's safety issues in risking that. You could have a TNE, a transnasal esophagoscopy, through the nose, sitting upright. It takes 5 minutes to get a diagnosis of acid reflux. It takes 5 to 10 minutes to do an analysis of your vocal cords and your esophagus. And that's the good news. And the second part of the good news is that technology, the sheath technology, is perfected in the T&E procedures. So every single person could get screened for acid reflux through a T&E procedure, and the patients should really start demanding it. We need a full movement here because they're not teaching T&E in medical schools. They're teaching the traditional methods because of the intellectual dishonesty, I think, that's in the medical profession right now, where they make the $3,000 a pop by putting patients out. And by the way, what about the effects on the economy of a patient being put out and losing an entire day of work, as opposed to a T&E procedure where it's a spaghetti-like camera? It works just as good as the traditional endoscope. And it's videotaped, and the doctor can go back and look at every aspect of it. And I've had it done to myself.
Yeah,
and,
I've heard that, too.
It works perfectly. And the question becomes, why is this not prevalent? Why don't we have 5 million T&E procedures a year?
Yep.
And it's all intellectual dishonesty and a real conspiracy on the part of the manufacturers.
Absolutely. We got to fly. Dave Schwartz, thanks so much. Check it out.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
The Cabo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Cabo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's DrinkSuperTea.com, 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-301-5435. That's 800-301-5435. 800-301-5435.
Fellow Patriots, my name is Todd Savage, founder of BlackRifleRealEstate.com. Like you, I was a prisoner of the alt-left sanctuary state until one day I chose to lead my family to freedom. Today we live on a sustainable 20-acre homestead where we shoot, hunt, garden, and homeschool our children without the tyranny of the nanny state looking over us. If you're ready to flee the city to the freedom of Idaho or Montana, our Black Rifle Real Estate team is here to help. Go to BlackRifleRealEstate.com. That's BlackRifleRealEstate.com.
Margolino, and he's written a book that's called The Forgotten War, Fire and Death. Joe and I had a chance to catch up before he joined us on the air, and oh my gosh, his story is so fascinating. We could probably talk for hours, but we don't have that much time, so we want to jump into the meat of this. So Joe, tell us about The Forgotten War, Fire and Death. It's about the Bronx, isn't it?
It was in South Bronx. They were trying to burn it down, and there was a change in clientele, and the welfare moved in, and we got a lot of fires, and also there was a master plan to burn the South Bronx down.
Wow, a master plan to burn the South Bronx down. For people listening to us, and plenty of people on the East Coast or people who have family from the Bronx and remember those times, and I should say you were a fireman, so you were there on the front lines, right?
That's right, for 10 years.
Wow, 10 years. And what did your comrades say? What did the rest of the guys say about what was happening around you?
Well, in the beginning, we were all young and full of pep and vinegar, and we accepted it. We loved fire. But then it got really out of hand. We were getting 2 and 3 good fires a night. It was really bad.
Wow. And putting out those fires, how strenuous was that? I mean, it must have stressed you out.
Yes.
Because you were stretched thin, right?
Right. Like I said, we got 2 or 3 good fires a night, and they sometimes took an hour or two to put out each one.
You said there was a master plan to burn the South Bronx down. Why was that? Because of how awful it had gotten?
No, it's there was no real estate left, and they wanted to, like, build the Bronx up. And there was nothing but tenements down there, and they were getting rid of the tenements.
Wow. And so, sure, it was odd that you kept having all of these fires, et cetera. And if you go back to that time, you know, the equipment was different. The amount of manpower was different. What was a typical crew like to put out all these fires, like the title of your book said, The Forgotten War, Fire and Death? What would a typical day or night be like fighting those fires?
Well, we were going out sometimes 20 times a night on calls. And alongside of that, we were fighting two good fires a night. So it was hell. Believe me, it was hell.
Wow. And you told me a story that I think is, people don't realize, I think, what it's like to be a fireman, where you're not only at the front lines of the fire, your own life could be taken, but that sometimes people, you save them and it's an amazing thing, and sometimes there's nothing you can do and they expire in your arms, right? You told me a story about that. You had a woman that you tried to rescue and she just expired right there in your arms, right?
Yes, I took her out of a plane crash and they gave it to me and her eye was out of her socket. It was on her cheek and she was to my arms and I was taking it to the ambulance and I could feel the blood just rolling in her chest and she died in my arms. She drowned in her own blood.
Wow. When you're in that kind of situation, how do you deal with that mentally? That's got to be taxing.
Well, when I first started the fire department, all I thought of was fighting fires, but there was so much death I almost quit. But you just had to put your mind to a certain state and get tough. Otherwise, you wouldn't have made it. You couldn't make it. It was too much death.
Wow. Wow. And the ages, the average ages of the guys that were on the front lines with you, Joe, how old were they?
Well, we were, when we started, we were in the 20s. And they lasted till maybe 40 years old. And a lot of them died before their time. We was taking in so much toxic fumes.
Wow.
And hundreds of them were injured, hundreds. Since 13 to fires, this was going on between the mid-60s and the late 70s. So hundreds of firemen were hurt.
Wow. And the name of the book is The Forgotten War, Fire and Death. Make sure that you pick it up at Amazon.com. What do you really hope people take away from reading your book, Joe?
I want them to know, well, a lot of them, the relatives don't even know what their relatives went through, like their husbands and et cetera, et cetera. And I want them to see what was really going on and what these poor people, these firefighters were going through. And also tens of thousands of people relocated. So it was hard on them also.
Right. So because of everything that was happening, people that didn't want to move or couldn't really have the means to move were forced to do that, is what you're saying, right?
Right. The Red Cross relocated a lot of people, yes.
Wow. And now when you think of your legacy and being a fireman and everything that happened there, and you see where the Bronx is now, what would you say?
I just say I would want the boys, the men, to be very, very careful because they used to put booby traps out just to kill us.
Oh.
They cut holes in the floor when you open the door. And if you didn't, but weren't careful, they cover it with linoleum so you couldn't see what was happening. You'd walk in and you go down two flights. So you always don't, fools rush in, so take your time.
Fools rush in. When you had your training, so that brings that up for people listening, and I can just imagine they're trying to envision this. And as you said, booby traps and other things that you had to be aware of. When you encountered new things, I would imagine you just shared that with each other. But did you get any kind of training like that when you were in school, in fire school?
No, ma'am. We were trained to fight fires. Our main thing was lives and property. First thing we do was go for rescue. But we would, at that time, there was nothing like that. They were cutting fire escapes. That if we grab onto a fire escape, we go down about five stories.
Ooh.
It was, they couldn't have trained you for that. There was no way. But then as time went on, you know, the word of mouth through the firemen, we were very, very cautious.
Yeah, thank goodness. And that's that camaraderie.
Right.
So we talked about the sad story of the woman who died as you were trying to get her to the ambulance. But tell us a rescue story, a good story that made you feel good at that you were able to save someone, help someone.
Oh, well, I broke down the door and there was an elderly lady laying on a couch and she was an invalid. and she must have fell asleep with a cigarette, and I no sooner picked her up than it turned the couch towards stuff. Otherwise, she would have burned right in front of me.
Wow. Wow. And the toll that this has taken on your life physically, what happens to you after you've done this kind of work?
Well, I got buried alive when I first started, and right now I'm a quadriplegic. I can't move. I just can't move.
Wow. Yep. Wow, Joe. All that dedication and fighting in a really rough, rough time. And the book, again, is The Forgotten War, Fire and Death. And you told me, you left me a message about you're raising money. Tell us about that.
Yes, I would like to, if any chance, like Hollywood or somebody would pick it up, I would donate $250,000 if I could, and I'd give it to St. Jude's and the city for those little babies that are dying of cancer.
Yeah, so, so sad. What do you think, and when you look at this, what do you think of, because I was in New York when 9/11 happened, and obviously
right.
You were there too. What did, and you saw the loss of the firemen there, what did that feel like to you? I thought that was just awful.
Oh, it takes a heart. See, at that time, I was going through post-traumatic stress, and it really, really helped. It killed me. It ripped the heart out of me. When the planes hit the building, I knew exactly how many boys died. I mean, not that they did. But I said to myself, over 200 boys died there. It's a fireman going up the staircase with no, they shut the electricity, but they were going up, and I could see the face on in the fireman. That just the idea that they were going to have to climb 70 flights of stairs to get upstairs, And they were worn out before they even started. And to see all those men die and people jumping out of windows 70 stories high, my God, because you have no chance because the heat was so great. It was like 2,000 degrees. The skin was melting on your body. It was bad. It was bad. It was no good.
Yeah. People didn't realize. I mean, they could just see it from afar, the horror of that day. But I really felt for the fire crew, too, and having so many volunteer firemen in my family's life.
I really have a lot of respect for volunteer firemen because they go out. Nowadays they get some kind of money up for medical. But when I was young, they didn't get anything. If they got hurt, it was theirs. And another thing is they go out and they'd fight a fire during the night. And then during the morning, they'd go to their regular job. And I really, really have great respect for volunteer firemen.
Boy, no kidding. Well, we have great respect for you, Joe, for everything that you've sacrificed, and I'm glad you're shining a light on this. Pick up his book, The Forgotten War, Fire and Death at Amazon.com.
There's also on YouTube, I got a trailer, and it shows you what was going on. It's The Forgotten War, Fire and Death, and the trailer comes on. Or you could just put Joseph F. Maraglino. It's a trailer. It shows you what was happening.
What happened, yeah.
Right.
Yep. Thank you, Joe. We appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And be safe, please.
Shot at in Mexico, 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas, riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet, scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, what the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success, and why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen, well, hopefully not, while pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now, anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com.